want you to know that I am happy for you. I wish nothing but the best for you both. An older version of me, she preferred it like me. She go down on you and I feared her. Does she speak eloquently? And would she have your baby? I'm sure she'd make our excellent mother. Cause the love that she gave that we made wasn't able to make it enough for you to be open wide. No. And every time you speak her name, she know how you told me you'd hold me until you died. Till you died, but you're still alive.
Hey, what's up, everyone? How's everyone doing? Are you all okay? Good. So, you are now listening to Drawing the Line with me, Desert Rose. Tune in on Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. I give advice on careers, relationships, friendships, and family. However, I do not give any legal or medical advice. If you have a legal issue, please contact a professional such as a lawyer, or if you need medical advice, or if you have a medical emergency, please contact your personal doctor or dial 911. There's something that I really want to talk to you guys about, and it's like, this is something that, it gets me every time, okay? It just gets me every time. Like, I cannot even begin to tell you guys how much this annoys me. Like, this kind of a thing really gets on my last nerve. Actually, this is one of many things that gets on my last nerve, and the more I do this radio show, you're probably going to find out more of what gets on my last nerve. But anyway, this thing really gets on my last nerve because I've been through it. This is another chat about parent-child relationships, and I'm going to talk about overly critical parents and why being one is just no bueno. I'll talk about what the experts say, and then I'll feed you all with my own two cents. So, let's get started, shall we? I recently came across an article called Growing Up with a Critical Parent, and it is from Yahoo. Before I get into this, however, I'd just like to say that nobody likes someone who's overly critical. As human beings, it drives us crazy when someone nitpicks at every little thing and pays attention to every little detail. When someone says stuff like, no, that's not right, it needs to be like this, it just makes you want to tell the person to shut the heck up, or if they think they can do it better, then why don't they just do it themselves? Anyway, the article talks about how kids growing up with critical parents can be greatly affected, and this can carry on into the adult years, depending on how bad the criticism was in the first place. For example, according to the article, anxiety can stem from having an overly critical parent. Like, if you don't do a math problem exactly right the first time, or if you don't play the violin perfect and your parent is constantly on your case about this, it is very easy to live in fear of being judged. The anxiety can come because of the pressure that is being put on you by the parent. Also, according to the article, even just a critical-sounding voice can work wonders. Another article I came across was called Pitfalls of Perfectionism, and it was from Psychology Today. This article talks about how perfectionism may not be a good thing after all, and yes, this does actually fall into the overly critical parent pool. No one is born perfect. Perfectionists are made, not born. But we have to wonder, where exactly did that perfectionism come from? In many cases, parents expect nothing less than perfect, thus putting a lot of strain and pressure on the child. Some parents expect their kids to get nothing but A's, and when things like this happen, one really has to wonder, is the parent expecting this out of the kid because they know their child is capable of it? Or is it an ego boost for the parent? Which actually reminds me, back when I was in middle school, I knew of a kid who got an A minus, yeah, an A minus on a test, and he appeared so upset, and I was like, why are you upset? You got an A minus. That's like a lot better than I did. And he told me, my parents don't accept A minuses, they only accept A's. You know, if they see this test, I'm going to be grounded for like a week. And I'm like, well, that's kind of harsh. I mean, personally, A minus, that's really good. Back to the drawing board. So psychologist Randy O. Frost, also a professor at Smith College, has done plenty of research on the matter and found that perfectionism looks like the following, and these are actual quotes, by the way. "My parents want me to be the best at everything, and as a child, I was punished for doing things imperfectly." Another article I came across was called "Critical Demanding Parents Can Damage Gifted Children," and it is from usatoday.com. I'd like to put in a quote before I get into this. "The road to hell is sometimes paved with the best intentions." Anyway, the article goes on to talk about how having parents who expect nothing less than perfection and results can actually leave a negative impact on the child's life. Such negativities include low self-esteem and being afraid to make a mistake every once in a while. "Not having high standards is not the problem," says New York City psychologist Linda Hamilton. "It's focusing on external success rather than a child's effort and how much he has learned." Hamilton also goes on to say that children with overly critical parents are terrified of making mistakes. Another article I came across was called "Being Overly Critical with Children Could Leave Them Anxious in Adulthood," according to a new report, and it is from PRWeb.com. So it says that according to a survey published by the Surrey Institute of Clinical Hypnotherapy, having overly critical or pushy parents can cause lack of confidence in later life. In the report, the overall percentage of children who reported their parent as being such, meaning pushy and overly critical, was 41%. The article also goes on to state that constant over-the-top criticism and punishing leads to withdrawal, disobedience, and insecurity. However, oddly enough, criticism is usually well-intentioned. It actually is. I refer to the road to hell comment here. It's true, though. Normally, parents who criticize and are overly pushy do it because they do want what's best for their child. Normally. In other cases, it's no more than an ego boost for the parent. However, when it comes to disobedience, withdrawal, and insecurity, then it's a problem. Paul Howard, anxiety specialist at the Surrey Institute of Clinical Hypnotherapy and marketing director at the National Council for Hypnotherapy and Excessive, said, "Excessive criticism from parents is probably the largest causal factor that I see with anxiety clients. We need to temper our criticisms and in particular not forget to praise when they do something positive. If you don't make the effort to do this, I could be seeing your children 30 years as clients." Now come on, Mom and Dad, you don't want that now, do you? Now, here are my two cents on critical parents, and I've grown up with a couple of pretty critical parents, and it's a pain in the butt, let me tell you that. So, like I said, I've grown up with critical parents, so I get that feeling of insecurity and lack of confidence. Parents normally want what's best for their children, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, a normal parent really does want what's best for their kid. But sometimes, you know, personally, I think it can go a little too far. You know, in many cases, parents will be a little pushy, but I think a really important question is to ask, how much is, well, too much? When you say stuff to a child, stuff like, "Shame on you, why did you do that? That's completely wrong, and you're such a slob, and you're such an idiot," stuff like that, kids are very vulnerable at certain ages, and young children... young children really do take what their parents say to heart. The more a child keeps hearing negative things about them, the more they believe it. Instead of outright criticizing and just nitpicking at every little thing, try using methods such as constructive criticism, where you give the child advice and show and tell them how to do things in a more positive way. Also, praise is very important for children to hear. Trust me, nobody likes constantly being bombarded with stuff they mess up on. It's fine to let your child know that they can do better if, you know, they aren't trying their hardest, but doing so positively can have better results than doing so in a negative way. Parents also should realize that making mistakes and messing up every once in a while is a part of life and a part of growing up. It's from making mistakes and learning from the consequences of our actions that help us shape into what kind of people we will be. And we are going to take a quick break. You're listening to Drawing the Line with Desert Rose on Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. only on radio.dominican.edu. So another topic I would like to discuss is about careers. I actually realized that during the past, what was it, like 2 or 3 radio shows? I say I talk about careers, like I give advice on careers, but I haven't been giving advice on careers. So I'm going to start that today. So, in today's episode, I'm going to talk about, you know, interviews, because I think they're a very, very important part of a job, and how to make a good first impression. So, we've all had that first job interview mini meltdown, that moment where you're constantly questioning yourself with things like, will my potential boss like me? Am I going to screw up? What if I say something stupid? But, honestly, you guys, there's like, there's, like, really nothing to worry about. I mean, yes, you do want to make a good first impression, but there's no need to sweat your own blood out over it. I mean, it's, yeah, the job interview is important, but try to keep in mind that it's just a job interview, and if you don't get the job, it's not the end of the world. Oh, and by the way, I've had 6 interviews so far, and I'm 24 years old, so I think I can speak on this a bit. I've definitely had, like, some experience with job interviews and whatnot. So I'm going to give you advice on how to score that interview. So one of the first rules about an interview is be on time. even if your employer is late, which is more than unlikely, but it is, but it has happened, you need to be on time. Being on time, heck, even early to an interview, shows an employee that you're responsible and care about the job. Actually, this reminds me, I was watching a show with my friend. It's called You Are Now Cut Off, or You're Cut Off. And I'm not going to get into the details because it's not important, but I will say that these really rich girls who live in Beverly Hills and have like everything you could possibly imagine, like we're talking Ferraris, you know, Maseratis, ball gowns, like bloody $10,000, like $500,000 limits on like 10 credit cards. And these, okay, I am talking about it a little, but hey, you kind of need to know a backstory, but I'll make it quick, don't worry. So anyway, the parents of these girls end up actually, they cancel their daughter's credit cards because their daughters kept going over. Doesn't this kind of sound like parental enabling? You know, you're constantly putting on this like huge amount of money, like a huge limit on your daughter's credit card, and she keeps on going over and over and over, and you keep on paying her bills and paying her bills and paying her bills. Doesn't that sound like parental enabling? Yeah, I think it does. Anyway, so the parents cut off these daughters' credit cards, and the girls all have to live in this modest house, and they all have to fend for themselves, meaning they have to get jobs, they have to earn money to go buy their own foods, because their parents are no longer helping them. Nobody's helping them. These girls, they're on their own. So anyway, this, and what I'm about to say actually does get into the whole, you need to be on time at your job interview, because that's like one of the most important impressions you leave on your potential employer. This one girl had an interview, and she didn't show up at all, and her employer actually moved on to the next person. So it's very important to be on time to your job, even early. It never hurts to be early to your job, because that shows that shows an employer that you're responsible and care enough about the job. But you know, even if you don't care about the job and you just filled out the application form to, you know, earn extra cash, and well, man, I've done that too. But hey, who hasn't? And this is actually where acting skills come in. You don't need to completely fake it and say that you love everything about the job you're applying for. Chances are your potential employer who's worked longer than you will know if you're pulling their leg. But show some interest. While an interview does not automatically guarantee a job, candidates for job applications may have a much better time scoring that job if they show responsibility. Showing up even 5 minutes to an interview only shows... showing up 5 minutes, even just 5 minutes late to an interview, only shows your potential employer that you're really not interested at all and that you don't care. If they see a character like this, they'll just move on to the next person. Trust me, they're not going to, because they're taking time out of their schedule to interview you and see if you're right for this job. And if you're late, they're not going to care. They're just going to move on to the next person, because they're going to be like, look, obviously you're not responsible enough, and I don't want to hire somebody who's going to be late. Another way to do well on an interview is be aware of how you look. Your attire, you know, what you wear also makes a huge impression. Would you walk into an interview at Macy's wearing a short skirt and a low-cut top? No. No, you wouldn't. Or how about ripped jeans and flip-flops? Once again, no, you would not walk into a job interview looking like that. For women, it's always good to wear something modest, yet cute. Some winning combinations are knee-length skirt, stockings or nylons, a nice pair of heels, but make sure your heels aren't too high and you don't want a lot of busy stuff on the shoes. You're going to an interview, not a nightclub. A nice shirt and maybe a small jacket. Also, when it comes to jewelry, Maybe don't overdo it. Like, you can wear, like, a pair of earrings, maybe, like, a bracelet, or maybe a necklace, or, like, a necklace and a bracelet, or a necklace and a pair of earrings, or a bracelet and a few rings. You know, you get the idea. Just, you don't want to overdo it. Also, when it comes to makeup, you don't want to be too heavy on the makeup. Going for a more natural look pretty much is a winner every time. What you want to do, you want to find makeup that complements your skin tone. You want to use makeup that goes well together. For example, I'm olive skin, so when it comes to light makeup, I will use like daytime makeup. I'll use light golds, light browns, like very, very light pinks. You know, when it comes to lipstick, I'll just maybe do like lip shine or a very, very pale lip gloss. You don't want to go overboard with the makeup. Also, for women, you could do a casual business attire, you know. That wouldn't hurt. And for guys, it's a good idea to wear a solid colored shirt such as blue or black. Nothing too bright and nothing too busy, along with solid colored slacks. Wearing a modest, conservative tie never hurts either. Asking questions is also considered to be a good idea. Asking your potential employer questions about the job shows interest in where you could possibly be working. Stay away from questions such as, how much do I get paid and how many days do I get a week do I get? How many days off a week do I get? Your possible employer will let you know how much you get paid per hour, as well as discuss availability with you. In fact, that's one of the questions that will come up in a job interview. They will ask you, when are you available? Good questions to ask are questions such as, what is the management style of the store? Can you describe a normal day working here? And what kind of responsibilities will be expected of me for this position? Like I said before, you want to show interest. Last one, and I think this is very important. If you're going into a job interview, you really should do some research about that job. If you're applying at a department store, say like Macy's, it's a good idea to know what kind of products Macy's sells, because Macy's is divided into so many things like cooking, makeup, skincare, clothing, beds, whatever department you're applying for, like whatever section of the store you're applying for, you really should brush up on your knowledge of their products. I mean, you don't have to be a complete expert on it, but just know some things, you know? And hey, it never hurts to up your knowledge about certain products. For example, Clinique is a good brand because it blah, 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 blah. That's what the internet is for. So we are going to take another quick break. You are listening to Drawing the Line with me, Desert Rose, Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. only on radio.dominican.edu. we are back, and now a brief and friendly announcement. This kind of fits into what I was talking about earlier, you know, with the whole job thing. Anyway, would you like to learn cool and helpful interview skills? How about something with Skype? Because there's an interviewing skills in Skype workshop. Drop on by at Guzman Hall, room 201, Wednesday, October 16th, from 4:30 to 5:45 p.m. You'll learn a lot of great things. Learn various techniques and work with a Skype interviewing expert who will help you score that interview. The point should go to you, shouldn't they? Remember, Guzman Hall, room 201, Wednesday, October 16th, from 4:30 to 5:45 p.m. Now, for the next thing I would like to talk about, and it is called privacy in relationships. Granted, many couples are very open with each other, and that's, you know, that's perfectly okay. I think it's very important and to be open with your significant other. I think it's very important to be open and honest with them, because, like, say your significant, this is just an example, say your significant other does something to really just, like, really annoy you, or just they do something that really, like, irritates the heck out of you. You know, how are they going to know what they're doing is bothering you if you don't tell them? You know, there's nothing, you know, it's perfectly okay for couples to be open with each other. But remember, personally, I think that there is a fine line between privacy and outright keeping secrets. Privacy includes your significant other's emails, Facebook messages, and cell phone messages. It's not good to keep secrets from your partner, but you don't have to tell them everything. For instance, if you don't want to tell them that one night you got so drunk that you went that you got if you want if you don't want to tell them that I don't know one night you got so drunk you went skinny dipping in a fish pond, you don't have to tell them that. I mean, would you like it or appreciate it if your partner was going through your emails, texts, and Facebook messages behind your back? No, I don't think you would like that. Despite the fact that people do get into relationships and are very open with their significant other, each individual does have a right to their privacy. Now, I realize that some people bring up, well, what if your partner's cheating on you and don't you have a right to know? Yes. Yes, you do. And the thing with cheating is that, number one, that's a pretty serious thing to accuse someone of. So you really should have hard evidence. And two, the person who's cheating on you is not likely to tell you. And I need to take a quick break for a second. I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Hello.
And we're back. So back to the whole cheating thing. So anyway, like I said, cheating is it's a pretty serious thing to accuse someone of. So you really should have hard evidence. And so that's number one. And two, the person who's cheating on you is not likely to tell you that they're cheating on you. You're more likely to find out in a caught in the act type of thing and then them admitting it. If you have your suspicions, follow them, but don't outright accuse the person just yet. Outright accusing someone of something they didn't do never ends well. The person may get defensive, or they'll adopt the statement of you're treating me like a bad person, so I may as well act like one. And my thoughts on cheating are, you know, I've never been cheated on, and I've never cheated on somebody, but my outlook on cheating is that it's no accident. You know exactly what you're doing. Even people who use the whole, "Oh, I'm sorry, baby, I was really drunk," excuse. People who are so drunk at the time, you know, you still do have somewhat of a sense of right and wrong. I remember answering a question on Yahoo Answers where this guy admitted that he cheated on his girlfriend and didn't want to tell her because he believed that lying about it was the best way to go. I told him that if he had the guts to cheat on her, then he should have the guts to tell her the truth. You know, be a man. You got yourself into this. Be a man and own up to your actions. If you think that she'll be mad at you for cheating on her, imagine how furious she'll be at you for lying to her. You know, it's never okay to cheat on someone no matter what the circumstances are. If you're no longer happy in the relationship, you know, if you are no longer in love with the person, then just leave. And right now I need to take another quick break, but I'll be back in a few minutes.
Okay.
Upside down, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've been cast aside and been despised, but I'm Daniel in the lion's den, Jonah in the belly of the whale. I'm not alone, so I cannot fail. No, no, no. Considered dead, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've been accused and been refused, but the stone that the builder refused shall be the head cornerstone. I cannot fail, 'cause I'm not alone. No, no, no. I cannot feel. No, 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 'cause I'm born.
out of town on a boat going to Southern Islands, sailing to reach before a following sea. She was making for the trades on the outside and the downhill run to Papeete. Off the wind on this heading lie the Marquesas. You got 80 feet of a water line, nicely making way. In a noisy bar in Avalon, I tried to call you, but on a midnight watch I realized why twice you ran away. Think about
how many times I had falling. Spirits are using me, larger voices calling. What heaven brought you and me, can I be forgotten?
See the Southern Cross for the first time, you understand now why you came this way. 'Cause the truth you might be running from is so small, but it's as big as the promise of a coming day. So I'm sailing for tomorrow, my dreams are a-dying, and my love is an anchor tied to you,
tied with a silver chain.
I have my ship and all her flags are a-flying. She is all that I have left,
and music is her name.
Think about
how many times I have fallen. Spirits are using me, larger voices call.
Watch out, here I come.
How's everybody doing? So, back to the whole cheating thing. You know, I've never been cheated on, and you know, I've never cheated on somebody. You know, like I said, my outlook on cheating is that there really is no excuse for it. You know exactly what you're doing. You know, also back to that kid on Yahoo Answers who confessed that he cheated on his girlfriend and, you know, like, didn't want to tell her because of the fact that he believed that if he continued lying about it, she would stay with him, because he knew that if he told her the truth, she would leave him. Which is, you know, something I can understand. I mean, personally, I don't think that I would ever want to stay with a cheater. Because the thing is about cheating, when you choose to stay with the person. I actually had a conversation with a few of my friends about this. But when you choose to stay with the person that cheated on you, you're never going to forget that you're never going to forget that they cheated on you. That's always going to be there. It's always going to be in the back of your mind. But the thing is, though, is that you do have to forgive them for it. You know, I've known some people I've heard of some situations where people who've had relations, like their girlfriend or their boyfriend has cheated on them, but they still stayed because despite the fact that they were cheated on, they still love the person. And, you know, just because, you know, love is a very funny thing. It's a very weird thing. Love, you know, love works in mysterious ways. Of course, God also makes mysterious ways, whatever. So, yeah, love is a very funny, it's a very fickle thing, because in many cases, love really knows no bounds. We all know the quote, love is blind. And the thing is, though, is that you can love someone, or you can be in love with them, or you can really care about that person, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you should, you know, stay with them. It doesn't mean that at all. And you know, back to this kid on Yahoo Answers. I basically told him after he said that he cheated on his girlfriend with another girl, and he also said that he didn't want to confess to her what he did, because he believed that if he lied to her, she would never find out, and thus she would continue being his girlfriend. Well, the thing is, though, is that, you know, I told him, look, you know, I told him that if you had the guts to cheat on her, then you really should have the guts to tell her the truth. You know, be a man. You're the one who got yourself into this situation. Be a man and own up to what you did. I also told him that this is only going to get a lot worse. Because the thing is, with this kind of a thing, with cheating or any lie such as that, like lying about to a significant other, lying to your significant other about cheating, that kind of a lie, eventually, that lie will blow up in your face, because the truth always comes out. Truth always comes out. Now, earlier on, even if you tell the truth and say, yeah, I'm sorry, I cheated on you, it's still not going to go over very well. But it would be so much worse for you if the person you cheated on found out from like another source that you cheated on, that they were cheated on by you, because you've led them to believe that you know, you were being faithful to them and they were the only man or woman for you at the time. And when that kind of a lie gets out, you know, when the truth comes out, like I said, it's going to blow up in your face. So if this kid, honest on Yahoo Answers, honestly thought that lying was the best policy, I'm sorry. I told the kid that he was off his rocker. He was nuts. He was crazy. Like, he was so crazy to believe that. Because it's like, if you think that your girlfriend will be mad at you for cheating on her, and trust me, she will be very mad at you for cheating on her, but imagine how furious she'll be at you for lying to her. I mean, I'm going to ask you guys a question. What would you be more angry at? The fact that someone cheated on you, even though they were honest about it and admitted it? No, but however, even if they were honest about it, that still doesn't take away from the fact that they cheated on you. Because it's like, what, you being honest with me about it automatically makes it okay? No. No, it doesn't. Or would you be more mad at the fact that the person who cheated on you kept lying to you about it and made you feel like a complete fool, thinking that this person really did love you and, you know, really they were faithful to only you? Actually, both situations are pretty bad, but in my opinion, I would be way more angry at the second one. And the reason why is because I would much rather have my heart broken by the truth than an outright lie. Because at least if it's the truth, you know, at least you can get over it. You know, at least you'll be able to see past it. But if your heart broke, if you're if your heart is broken and it was based on a lie, it can really make you think, what else has that person been lying about? Like, what else have they not told the truth about? And the thing with cheating is that cheating can be so damaging on people that it can create a lot of trust issues. Like, one of my friends had a boyfriend who has, actually, I've had a couple of friends who've both had boyfriends whose previous girlfriends have cheated on them. And this created such a trust issue within these two men. Well, actually, one of them's a little boy, and I say that because he has a rotten attitude, but that's not important. So these two guys, this whole cheating thing created such huge trust issues. It violated so many trust. It just almost completely destroyed their trust. And because of this violation of trust, those two guys used the excuse of, you know, my girlfriend cheated on me, so I need to make sure that I keep tabs on my current girlfriend at all times and make sure she doesn't do anything to upset me. And actually, one of my friends, her boyfriend would constantly call her and say stuff like, do you love me? Are you going to cheat on me? Are you going to do this? Are you going to do that? And da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, there was one time when she went off to Europe with her family, and when she told him, he was very upset about it, because he said pretty much along the lines of, no, I don't want you going to Europe because you're going to cheat on me. And the thing is, though, is that, you know, once again, I can understand how being cheated on, like, multiple times, or even just, like, you know, once or twice, can completely destroy your trust or just make you have very severe trust issues. However, even though that's completely understandable, that still does not give you an excuse to be a tyrant over your current boyfriend or girlfriend. You know, you can't accuse somebody of a crime they haven't committed, which also brings me back into the whole, you know, cheating is a very serious thing to accuse someone of. And before you do that, you need to have actual proof that they're cheating on you. Otherwise, it's just going to end very badly. And also, like I said before, when you accuse someone of something that they've never done, say cheating, like, oh, do you love me? Are you going to cheat on me, or you're going to cheat on me? I know you are. The person that whose face you're all up in is going to be like, you know what? You're treating me like a criminal, so I might as well act like one, even though they've done nothing wrong. And actually, this one girl that I knew, like, I don't know her personally, but, like, I knew her, like, she's not a friend of mine, but I knew her, like, a while back. She actually did end up cheating on her boyfriend because he would constantly accuse her of cheating on him, even though it never happened. No, I'm not condoning the fact that she cheated on him. I'm not condoning the fact that she did it to get back at him. Like, you know, hey, you know what? You're constantly accusing me of cheating on you, even though I haven't done anything wrong. So now I will cheat on you because I'm getting so sick and tired of the way you're treating me. You know, once again, I'm not condoning I'm not condoning that she cheated on him. I'm really not. But I can understand the retaliation. You know, it is human nature to want to take revenge on someone who has wronged you. It really is. You know, there have been situations where people who have gotten back at other people because they were hurt in a really horrible way, be it whether it's emotionally, verbally, or physically. But the thing is, though, is that, you know, revenge isn't the answer. And actually, this reminds me of does anyone here know about the cartoon show Avatar: The Last Airbender? Not the movie. No, not the cruddy movie. The cartoon, the original, the good one. There is a quote said by Aang when Katara wanted to get revenge on a Fire Nation soldier for murdering her mother. I think the quote went something like this. Revenge is like a two-headed rat snake. When you're taking down your enemy, you're also poisoning yourself. So, or something like that. But it's the whole thing of when you try to get revenge on someone, like, you know, you try to destroy their belongings or smash their car, whatever, you're only hurting yourself. And actually, I really don't think it's a good idea to, you know, even if the person cheated on you, I can understand wanting to do it. Like, you know, I can understand the anger and the hurt, but it's probably not a good idea to destroy that person's belongings or, like, you know, smash their car, because you are just cheated on, and that's a very hurtful thing to experience. You don't need a legal issue. You don't need legal issues on your back. Trust me, nobody wants that. So, yeah, you know, also with cheating, if you're no longer happy in the relationship, you know, if you were no longer in love with the person, then just leave. You know, tell the person that you're no longer happy. I mean, it's perfectly normal to want to work it out, but when you're having even just relationships in general, not just with cheating, if you're having, like, the same problems over and over and over again and nothing's getting fixed, and you've pretty much reached, like, a dead end, like, you've had it with this relationship, like, you want out, then be honest with the person. Tell them you want out, but don't cheat on him. And, you know, as much as I'd love to talk about this whole cheating thing, you know, talk more about it, we're gonna have to end the show. So we'll pick up on this subject next time, because I will have a lot to say. You're gonna love it. Like, I already didn't have a lot to say before. You're all probably thinking, oh dear God, she has more to say on this subject? Oh, I better listen. You should listen. So I had a lot of fun today with you guys, and I can't wait till next Monday. It's going to be an awesome episode, so be sure to tune in. You're listening to me, DJ Desert Rose, and this is Drawing the Line, Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. only on radio.dominican.edu. Have a great afternoon, you guys.
ikkalanni ikkalanni maharo.